Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The stories of Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass, their roots in Maryland and their extraordinary advocacy for freedom, will come alive to public television viewers next month in two fresh documentaries. The films were created by executive producer and director Stanley Nelson, whose documentaries chronicling the African-American experience have won scores of accolades. Among them, the 2016 NAACP Image Award for the feature-length The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. His documentary Attica earned the Directors Guild Award for Outstanding Directorial Achievement. And his feature film Crack, Cocaine, Corruption, and Conspiracy for Netflix was the 2022 DuPont Columbia Awards finalist. On the History Channel, Tulsa Burning, the 1921 Race Massacre with co-director Marco Williams, was nominated for 3 Primetime Emmy Awards. Stanley Nelson joins us by Zoom. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
What drew you to this pair of films, Becoming Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman, Visions of Freedom?
Well, first I should say what an honor it was to tell those stories. I mean, you know, I knew a little bit about Frederick Douglass and a little bit about Harriet Tubman, but making the films was a real chance to jump in and dive deep into their lives and to their legacies. So I was really excited and honored to make these films.
Well, let's talk about the Tubman film, which is subtitled Visions of Freedom. I mean, Visions is not just a poetic flourish. Talk about her visions.
Yeah, one of the things that I learned, and I think, you know, most people will learn when they see the film is, you know, Harriet Tubman was in a weird accident, was hit on the head with a weight when she was a little girl. And she saw visions for the rest of her life. She really believed in the visions that she saw. And the visions kind of told her that her mission was to free people. So we use that kind of metaphor, and we named the film Visions of Freedom.
The actress Alfre Woodard narrates the film. Early on, we hear her voice, some thoughts that Tubman wrote later.
God's time is always near. He set the North Star in the heavens. He gave me the strength in my limbs. He meant I should be free.
Several historians in the film talk about Tubman's sense that God was always guiding her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that Harriet Tubman believed. As people say in the film, you know, it was a time where the majority of people were much more religious or their lives were based in religion than people are today. And so it wasn't that abnormal that Harriet Tubman felt that she was guided by God. I think the visions that she had were abnormal, but I think that Harriet Tubman for all her life felt that she was doing God's work.
Tubman made, it's thought, 13 trips back to Maryland after she escaped and brought to the North about 70 enslaved people, and not always the people she was seeking when she set out. Talk about how she didn't waste any of her trips.
You know, we should understand that Harriet Tubman was an escaped person, an escaped enslaved person. So she took great risk to her own freedom to go back and free people. And one of the first trips she made was to go back to get her husband. And when she got to her husband, she realized that he had remarried and that he did not want to go. But she didn't waste her trip. She found some other people who wanted to escape to freedom and brought them along and took them to freedom.
And then the same thing you report in what I guess was her last secret trip in 1860, after Lincoln had been elected but had not become president yet, she was heading back for her sister Rachel.
Yeah, and she found that her sister had passed away. And again, she didn't waste time and she didn't waste the trip, and she took another family to freedom. People had no communication with the enslaved population. you know, so that her sister had passed. It wasn't that that somebody could write her a letter or send her a telegram and say that, you know, your sister passed. She didn't know. And that was part of the way that enslavement worked, you know, that it was isolating.
One of your historians also points out that enslaved people who liberated themselves were the original abolitionists.
Yeah, one of the things I always say is that the first abolitionist was the first African that was enslaved. You know, that was the first person who said, "Okay, no, this is wrong." So one of the things that we wanted to do in the film was one, really talk about the abolitionists and the Underground Railroad as being, you know, largely powered by African Americans. So many times historians told us, you know, as one person says in the film, you know, we think about we talk about the Underground Railroad and we think about Quakers, white Quakers, but the Underground Railroad was largely African Americans, especially in the South.
The courage that Tubman showed in those missions back to Maryland is more than I can fathom. But your film details a whole other liberation effort she organized in the South during the Civil War. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's so amazing about Harriet Tubman is that she died in 1913. So she lived, you know, many different lives. She lived in a life as an enslaved girl. She lived in a life as the abolitionist woman who helped free African Americans from enslavement. But also she, in the Civil War, she was kind of a spy, and she led incredible raid where they freed a huge plantation, and the enslaved people from the plantation all ran and got on these boats that Harriet Tubman led into the South and led this huge group of people to freedom.
And of course, the fight for equality did not stop after the Civil War. Tell us about the incident on the train.
Yeah, one of the things that happened after the Civil War, you know, nobody knew what this country was going to be. And I think for so many people, you know, African Americans and so many white folks too, there was a feeling that this country, you know, would really change. It would turn a corner. Slavery has ended. It's gonna change things. But right after the war, Harriet Tubman was on a train. And she had a pass because she was a Civil War hero. The conductor asked her to go into one of the train cars in the back. She refused. And, you know, he forcibly tried to remove her from the train car. Again, Harriet Tubman was incredibly strong for a small woman. And he ended up with another conductor breaking her arm. Uh-huh. And I think that one of the things that, you know, Harriet Tubman realized at that point was that, you know, it was not going to be smooth sailing. It was not going to be a complete turnaround in this country, that enslavement was now replaced by Jim Crow.
The other film that will air on public television next month is about Frederick Douglass. I want to ask you about that in a few minutes. But the more I learned about both of these people from your films, the more I wondered if there was a connection. I was so glad to hear part of a letter that Douglass wrote to Tubman in 1868. It's read by actor Wendell Pierce.
Dear Harriet, the difference between us is very marked. Most that I have done and suffered in the service of our cause has been in public. The most you have done has been witnessed by a few trembling, scared, and footsore bondmen and women whom you have led out of the house of bondage and whose heartfelt, God bless you, has been your only reward. The midnight sky and the silent stars have been witness to your devotion to freedom and of your heroism.
Of course, Douglass there is laying out only part of Harriet Tubman's legacy. How would you summarize her legacy?
I think that Harriet Tubman was just an incredible individual. I think that, you know, she was a small, dark-skinned African-American woman. And, you know, she was functionally illiterate, but she risked her life over and over again to free people from enslavement. And she felt that that was her mission in life. And so I'm just awed by the bravery of Harriet Tubman and by the tenacity of Harriet Tubman. And, you know, that's why we're talking about her today, what, 170 years after, you know, the missions that she undertook to free people.
Yeah, we're going to take a pause in our conversation with filmmaker Stanley Nelson and then pick up the thread of what it meant to become Frederick.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WIPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
Douglas. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Frederick Douglass, born Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey on Maryland's Eastern Shore, never knew precisely when he was born, probably 1817 or 1818. After he had escaped to freedom, he described himself as a graduate of the peculiar institution of slavery with a diploma written on his back in the scars of the many beatings he had suffered. Stanley Nelson's new documentary, which will air on public television October 11th, is titled Becoming Frederick Douglass. Stanley, those of us today looking back at the extraordinary advocate and revolutionary Douglass was, need a reminder of what it meant to become Frederick Douglass. Early in the film, you let us hear from Christopher Bonner, Associate Professor of History at the University of Maryland.
Douglass was becoming various things across his life. He was becoming free and figuring out how to make himself a person who was not enslaved. He was becoming literate and becoming a person who had cultivated all sorts of knowledge that he could use in his politics. And what's most interesting is that he was becoming a person who could change what the nation was and help to eliminate the institution of slavery.
When and how did this idea of becoming present itself to you as the theme for this film?
One of the things that we had to do when we started the film that became Becoming Frederick Douglass is that we had to figure out how we could talk in a substantive way about Frederick Douglass's life, given we only had an hour. So we said, let's tell the story of the first half of his life, or, you know, the first part of his life, where he goes from being an enslaved young boy, illiterate, to the end he's thought of as being probably the most photographed American in the 19th century.
You walk us through some of the self-creation, recreation young Frederick Bailey did on the Eastern Shore and in Baltimore, how he grabbed chances to learn to read. But he was trained as a ship's caulker, I mean, a skill, but manual labor. How did he get to that third challenge Professor Bonner laid out, the idea that he could change the nation?
I think it was very gradual. When he married a free African-American woman, and, you know, she encouraged him to escape from Baltimore, escape from Maryland into the North, where he could claim his freedom. And he did that. And because he had that experience of being enslaved, he started speaking in abolitionist meetings. And very quickly, other abolitionists realized that he was an incredible speaker and that he could convey the horrors of enslavement in a way that few people could. And so that gradually he became an outstanding speaker, a sought-after speaker. And traveled all over the country speaking, or at least in the north of the country, speaking against slavery and for abolition.
Unlike Tubman's family, who tried to hold her back, the woman behind Frederick Bailey, when he was still Frederick Bailey, before he'd escaped, Anna Murray, encouraged him and sold some of her belongings to finance his escape. Kenneth B. Morris, Jr., president of the Frederick Douglass Family Initiatives, muses in your film that if she hadn't, who knows if he would have had the courage and wherewithal to escape, and if that hadn't happened, we would be a different country today. What are your thoughts about what would have happened?
Yeah, I think that who knows what would have happened. You know, we're just kind of guessing. But I think that it was really something that we wanted to do to be able to talk about Frederick Douglass's his wife and the role that she had. Because too many times, you know, Anna Marie is not included in the stories of Frederick Douglass, and she was instrumental in him becoming Frederick Douglass.
So much more to talk about. What do you want viewers to take away from becoming Frederick Douglass?
I think that it's important that the viewers understand not only Frederick Douglass's life, but also the progression that a man can take. You know, Frederick Douglass is a man. He's a man that started out as enslaved. He's a man that started out not being able to read or write. He's a man that basically taught himself to read or write and became one of the most famous individuals, white or African-American, in this country. And he kept progressing. He kept trying to change this country and make it better. And I think that's one of the things that so important about the man that Frederick Douglass became.
Thank you. Thanks for this conversation.
Oh, thank you so much.
Acclaimed documentary filmmaker Stanley Nelson is executive producer, and director of Harriet Tubman, Visions of Freedom, which will debut on Maryland Public Television and PBS stations nationwide next Tuesday, October 4th, and Becoming Frederick Douglass, which will debut the following Tuesday, October 11th. They are co-productions of Firelight Films and Maryland Public Television, supported through an appropriation from the state of Maryland.